From the highest mountains to the bluest seas, the driest deserts to the icy poles, Kate Turkington has traveled there, and now she's inviting you to travel with her through your radio. Travels with Kate, Sundays at 12 midday, only on 101.9 High FM.
Very good afternoon to you. Hi, 101.9. It's Kate Turkington and Travels with Kate. And while the good weather is persisting, I know some days it's a bit off, but we've had some glorious days this week. I've got a lovely, lovely thing for you to do if you live in Johannesburg or thereabouts. But first of all, I just want to tell you an amazing story. My daughter Tara went off to Uganda to see the gorillas, to do some gorilla trekking. And I did that on my 70th birthday. So don't ever think age is going to stop you doing stuff. And it took me a long time in windy, impenetrable forest, very, very well named in Uganda. And it took us 8 hours to find the gorillas. My word, we had people pushing us and pulling us and going over the canopy and the trees. It was quite an ordeal, but so worth it. My daughter Tara goes last week to, again, windy, impenetrable forest in Uganda. They find, just three of them, they find a group of gorillas in clearing, sunbathing, just about an hour after they'd been trekking. And as my daughter walked in, there were just the three of them in her group. As they walked in, a huge silverback gorilla came and grabbed her by the ankle and pushed her to the ground and then retreated and sat looking at her. And I said to her, were you frightened, terrified? She said, Mum, it happened so quickly. She said, I got up and we stayed with them for about an hour. They were grooming. They had two babies. I think there were 8 or 9 gorillas. They had babies. They were grooming. They were feeding on stalks and stuff. And she was making, because gorillas do make eye contact with you. They were making eye contact, but she said she didn't make eye contact with the silverback again. And then just towards the end, just before they left, she felt this silver back trying to make eye contact with her. I said, what did you do? She said, I immediately looked away and backed off. I didn't want to be grabbed by a gorilla again. But what a wonderful, wonderful, life-changing experience, really. But you know, Uganda is now being carved up by the Chinese, as so many African countries are, and there are roads going across national reserves and pipelines. And so if you're going to go chimpanzee or gorilla trekking, do it as soon as you can. The experience of a lifetime. And she also, on my recommendation, stayed another day to see the shoebill stork, which is the most silly looking animal bird in the world. My youngest grandson, Sam, who's 11, said it looks like a villain from a Dr. Seuss book. So go on to my Facebook page, Kate Turkington, or go on to my daughter's page, Tara Turkington, and look at some of those pictures of the gorillas. They're absolutely mind-blowing. And do it. Do things now while you can. Don't wait and put off till tomorrow what you can do today, really. But here's something you can do today, and I'll be telling you a bit more about it as we go along, especially if the weather is good. Have you ever been, if you live in Johannesburg or thereabouts, or even if you're up here on a trip, have you ridden on Africa's longest mono cableway? Go to Hartbeespoort Dam, get a bird's eye view of the mountains, the surroundings everywhere from the aerial cableway in Hartbeespoort. As I say, it's Africa's longest mono cableway. Absolutely amazing. You've got to do it. You can book online or you can go, but it's better to book online to stereocableway.com because then you don't have to stand in queues. But it's an experience. If you haven't done it, it really is something you must do.
From the highest mountains to the bluest seas, the driest deserts to the icy poles, Kate Turkington has traveled there, and now she's inviting you to travel with her through your radio. Travels with Kate, Sundays at 12 midday, only on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. I'm Kate Turkington. I'm telling you about the Hartbeesport Aerial Cableway. You get a 360-degree uninterrupted view over not only the dam, but far, far beyond. On a clear day, you may not see forever, but you'll be able to spot Johannesburg, Pretoria, and a passing eagle or two. Well, I'm sure you all know about Hartbeesport Dam. I mean, there's so many adventure and sporting activities there, but let me just give you a bit of a backstory to the cableway. There was one, some of you may remember, donkeys years ago, there was one there, but it closed, it was forgotten, it fell into disrepair. That was the original 1973 cableway. It's now renamed the Aerial Cableway Hartbeesport, and it opened about 13 years ago now. It's got 14 six-seater cable cars with wraparound vision, the latest Swiss technology. You can imagine you're in a James Bond movie when you're going up in one of these cars. High-tech equipment. So what happens, you go to the base station, you climb into your very comfortable aerial gondola, and then there's a whir and a hum, and the sophisticated machinery lifts you very gently off the ground, higher and higher until you reach the top. If you want to do just a twosome, there are two people cars as well, and it's a wonderful way to be. If you want to be alone, you can also go alone. If you're a photographer, it's a great thing to do. So what do you do when you get to the top? Loads and loads of things today. First of all, you've got the stunning views. There's a kilometre long Dassie loop. Obviously, keep an eye out for the Dassies. They're nearly always there. They're sunning themselves on the slopes of the mountain. And you can look beyond the dam, far, far, far beyond. And as you walk that kilometre loop, by the way, it's all flat. It's wheelchair friendly. Or if you're a bit rickety with your knees, perfectly flat, easy to walk. There are information plaques all along the wall that surrounds the loop. So you stop in front of one, it shows you there's Pretoria, there's so-and-so. So all the points of interest. And also, take time to spot birds. There's small animals, flowers, trees, shrubs. And remember, maybe you do know this, the Mahalisberg Mountains are the oldest mountains in the world. Did you know that? The Mahalisberg, the oldest mountains in the world. I'll tell you a bit more about them if we have time. So you come up to the top, you can have a snack, you can't take your own food or drink, but there's loads of places where you can grab a bite or sit down for a meal, whatever you want. There are express food stores, pizzas, burgers. You can actually order a pre-packed delicious picnic if you've got a special occasion. You can get an ice cream or you can take yourself off to, there's lots of seating areas at the top there, and you can even hire your own personal boma for a special occasion. So that's really a special, special thing to do. A teenager's birthday party or any or some sort of celebration. It's a lovely, lovely thing to do. If you fancy fine dining, there's even a fine dining, the Bugatti restaurant. That's at the base station. And if you've time and you want to spend the day there, can you believe it? There's even a spa which offers you different kind of packages. You can do the cable ride, you can have a neck rub, whatever. Really a wonderful way to spend a day out with our so good winter Johannesburg weather. It's open every day of the week from 8 o'clock in the morning till 4:30 in the afternoon. Obviously, weather permitting. And the last cable car goes down at 5, so you don't want to miss that, otherwise you're going to be marooned on top of a mountain all night. What does it cost? It's 280 rand for an adult, children 185, and pensioners 170. And you can avoid the queues, I say, and web tickets, if you book online, is cheaper. And if it's your birthday, you get a free ride. All you have to do is show your ID book. So that's something worth thinking about. If you've got a birthday coming up, you get a free ride. And just to go back to the geology of the Mahalisberg, I told you it is a World Heritage Site, by the way. It's the oldest mountains in the world. They're reckoned to be 2.3 billion years old. 2.3 billion years old. I won't even try to go into the geology because I'm not a geologist. But if not the oldest, it's certainly one of the oldest mountain ranges on Earth. How do you get there? Most of you know the way to Hartbeespoort. You take the R511 and then put it onto your I call her Olga, my satellite system. Put it onto your satellite system, and you turn off 511 just before you get to the town. So you can go to the cable car. If you're adventurous, you can paraglide or abseil from the cable car top. So you can stay as long as you like. Obviously a clear day. Be sure to take a camera, sunscreen, a hat, binoculars, even if you're not a bird watcher, try and take a pair of binos. And of course around the area, lots and lots to do. There's the Bush Babies Monkey Sanctuary, Elephant Sanctuary. I've stayed a night at the Elephant Sanctuary in Hartbeespoort. That's a lovely thing to do. You get up and you brush down the elephants and you walk with them. That's another very nice weekend thing to do. And, of course, the Anne van Dyck Cheetah Centre. And pre-booking for that is absolutely essential. She's dead now, Anne van Dyck, but she's responsible for actually almost single-handedly saving South Africa's cheetah population. So you can go there and you can see baby cheetahs, young cheetahs being raised. And then they're exported all over the world. And you can do a game drive through the different camps. They've got wild dogs. They've got all sorts of things, lovely birds there too. And if you want to go a little bit further, of course there's Marapeng, the Cradle of Humankind World Heritage Site. So there you are. Lots of things to do if it's a good weekend, or even in the week better if you are able to go in the week. And the web address is Hearty's Cableway, Hearty's Cableway, or one word, .co.za, heartiscableway.co.za. Lovely, lovely thing to do.
From the highest mountains to the bluest seas, the driest deserts to the icy poles, Kate Turkington has traveled there, and now she's inviting you to travel with her through your radio. Travels with Kate, Sundays at 12 midday, only on 101.9 High FM.
101.9 High FM, I'm Kate Turkington, and now is the time of the program to talk about books, and a fascinating book came across my desk just this last week. It's called Good Morning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, Morning, when you sit Shiva, when we're grieving for somebody. Good Morning. And it's subtitled Honest Conversations About Grief and Loss. It's by Sally Douglas and Imogen Cam, and Jonathan Bort released it in this country. You'll find it in a good bookshop anywhere. Good Morning. It's Murdoch Books, but if you just ask for Good Morning, I suppose I should say. And it's a very wise guide for anybody who's loved and lost, and I suppose most of us at some stage have loved and lost. And now let me tell you about the two young women. They started this podcast, Good Morning. Sally Douglas and Imogen Corn, they met after the very sudden deaths of their mothers, only months apart. And their experiences led them to launch a podcast. And it's a very no-holds-barred, relatable approach to talking about grief. And it sparked a very big following now, that podcast, of people eager to have honest conversations about what it really feels like to deal with loss. I remember when I was growing up, when dinosaurs ruled the earth, if somebody had died or we knew a family where somebody had died, you would almost cross the road so you didn't have to talk to them. It wasn't because we weren't compassionate or we weren't sympathetic or empathetic or wanted to share their loss. People actually didn't know what to say. You didn't talk about things like that 50 longer years ago. Now people talk openly about stuff. And this book, Good Morning, I suppose, if I pronounced it correctly, other than Good Morning, Good Morning, it's a compassionate survival guide for anybody who's dealing with grief. And the two young women say it's the sort of book they wish they'd had to help them through their very dark times. And in the book, they look at all the different ways that grief can impact our lives. Things like they call ugly crying or exhaustion, that grief brain. I remember after my husband died, that was fairly flip. Well, I wasn't flip. I was obviously very shocked and upset by the whole thing. But I remember it was about 2 months later, I was hanging the washing out on the line, and like a flood of grief enveloped me. It was like a flood poured over me. And I stood there sobbing uncontrollably with the wet washing and the pegs in my hand. Grief impacts people in very, very different ways. And that's what this book is about. It gives you coping mechanism. Let me tell you some of the chapter titles. The elephant in the room. Rather what I was talking about there. People didn't like to talk about death. Now we must talk about it. It's time, they say, to talk about grief. And then how do you cope with all the kind of mixed bag of emotions you feel? Maybe if somebody's been very, very ill and in pain for a long time, you feel relief almost that somebody is now out of their misery. Then you feel guilty because you think, oh, I shouldn't be feeling that. So these are kind of some of the subjects they talk about. When grief gets physical, panic attacks, exhaustion, that kind of stuff. And again, some coping mechanisms I'll give you in a moment. And then how do you cope with loneliness after loss? Because you may be part of a very big family, but you still, if you're losing somebody you've loved a lot, who's been part of your life for so long, it's a very lonely business coping with that grief. So then they go on to, how do you manage milestones, keeping memories alive? If it's somebody's birthday and it's a year, let's say, since they died, how do you celebrate or remember that? Maybe you light a candle, or maybe you have a chat with the person who died. And also, you hear me using the term died. I'm, as you know, I'm English. I was born in London. I was brought up talking about people who died. Passed on is a very, or passed away is a very South African expression. But then the book says, find out what the person you're talking to uses. Maybe you use passed on or passed away. Maybe somebody else uses died. So find out in advance and use the kind of language they would use. And then there's a very, very good chapter on tips for your support team. So that's advice for your partner, your family, your friends, your colleagues. So all sorts of good things. And then they give examples of what their listeners have said. I mean, if you haven't got support, maybe you went through or you're going through a lack of support, they all say, get rid of the energy vampires, get rid of the people who come round with a milk tart saying, I'm so sorry for your loss. And they also, well, maybe those people are genuine, but also maybe they're not. Let go, they suggest, perhaps of some of the relationships that don't particularly help you. And don't get cross or angry or guilty about that. And one of their listeners said, and I really like this, focus on showing gratitude for the ones who are there for you and forget the rest. And also, put your needs first. If someone's making things worse, they literally aren't worth your time. So lots and lots of good tips from listeners and from the authors themselves. Cherish, so many people say this, cherish the good relationships, get rid of the ones that make you feel really bad. And we all know those ones. And there's a very, very good section on things to say, actually things to say. You know, instead of, for example, saying, my condolences to you and your family, they suggest something like, there are no words for how hard this is. My thoughts are with you and your family, and when you need me, I'm here. Isn't that a nice way of putting it? Because, you know, we sort of trot out these platitudes, condolences, I'm so sorry. They say, don't say so sorry for your loss. Say something like, I'm so sorry. Just want you to know that you're surrounded by love during this difficult time. I'm just a phone call or a WhatsApp away, and I'll be here for you whenever you need me. Aren't those just wonderful, wonderful things to hear? And if somebody says, like, it was their time to go, dreadful thing to say. That really is not the thing to say. Just something like, I'm thinking of you every step of the way. So lots and lots of good advice in the book. And what not to say, they say, here are some phrases to avoid. They're in a better place. They don't advocate saying that. They wouldn't want you to be sad. I must say, I've said that myself. They say, avoid that. Rather, thinking of you, I'm here if you need me. Everything happens for a reason. Well, does it? They suggest you avoid that. They lived a good life. Oh, goodness, I've said that so many times. They say, please don't say that. Just rather thinking of you, I'm here, you know, try and avoid the platitudes. Worst of all, they say, you'll find someone else. I must say I've never, ever, ever even thought of saying that. And also they go on to say, don't compare. You know how you feel. I went through this when Rupert or Mary died. Whatever you do, don't do that. Just don't do it. It's not the time to share your experiences or try to compare. They're in a lot of pain. You help them get over that. It's not about you. It's about them. So there you are. An amazing book. Good Morning, Sally Douglas and Imogen Khan, subtitled Honest Conversations About Grief and Loss. And their podcast you can find, let me just find, it's at, this is on Instagram. If you're not on Instagram, it's the easiest thing to be on. I'm on it. I never post on it, but I occasionally go on it to listen to a podcast or to listen to somebody else. It's the podcast is on Instagram at Good Morning Podcast. At Good Morning Podcast. Remember that morning is M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. At Good Morning Podcast. So it's a really, really super book. Maybe you need it for yourself. Maybe you could buy it and give it to a friend. Very, very helpful, and it's something we've all at some stage had to deal with. I don't even like talking about losing somebody, because it's like losing a parcel or losing a bag or something. You never lose somebody you love. They're always, and this is a cliche, and sorry to sound Facebook cheesy, but you never lose somebody you love. They're always in your heart.
From the highest mountains to the bluest seas, the driest deserts to the icy poles, Kate Turkington has traveled there, and now she's inviting you to travel with her through your radio. Travels with Kate, Sundays at 12 midday, only on 101.9 High FM.
101.9 High FM, I'm Kate Turkington, and as I'm sure you all know, the largest, oldest ultramarathon in the world is going to be run in a week's time on Sunday, June the 11th. The 9th Comrades Marathon, oh, what am I saying? The 96th Comrades Marathon is going to be run, as I say, this coming Sunday. So down run starts in Pietermaritzburg at the City Hall at 5:30 in the morning, and it ends 12 hours later at the Hollywood Betts Kingsmead Cricket Stadium in Durban. And now I'm going to be chatting with one of the most famous names in South African sporting history, let alone comrades. And if I said comrades, you'd immediately know that I've got Bruce Fordyce, the legendary Bruce Fordyce with me. Welcome, Bruce.
Thank you, Kate. Lovely to chat to you, but you're making me feel very humble.
Oh,
the legendary is a bit of an exaggeration, but still.
But I'm delighted to remember that years and years ago, you were actually a student of mine.
Yes. The Star newspaper put on these extra lessons for people who are hoping to get through matric, and I went to the maths lessons with William Smith and then English lessons with you. So right at the back of your class, there would have been myself and a couple of my mates listening to your pearls of wisdom. And that was English, extra English with Kate all those years ago, 1974. I can tell you that was my matric year. And you will be delighted to hear that thanks to your English lessons, I achieved an A in matric for English, which for me was that was great.
I would have expected no less, Bruce. But now, just
you.
Remind us how many comrades you actually ran and how many you won.
Well, I ran 30 and I won 9. So my win-lose ratio is not great, but I managed to win 9. So.
And I always say this to runners. I like to walk. I've never been a runner. What makes people run? Why do you run?
I think it's because we are innately hunter gatherers. You know, for my sins, I worked in the archaeology department at WITS, and I can tell you that as a hunter gatherers, we were the finest running animal in the whole of Africa on the savannas. And I know cheetahs are faster than us, and certain animals are stronger than us. But we had one thing that we could do, and that was long distance running. We, in the early stages of our development, ran animals, buck particularly antelope, to exhaustion, and killed them with stones and rocks and things in our bare hands and ate them. And so running is actually in our DNA. It's just that so many of us have forgotten to do it. We're in an amazing running machine. We've got beautiful ligaments and tendons, shock absorbers, and then we sweat, which is astonishing. Our sweating enables us to cool down, whereas, for instance, a dog has to pant. And so I think running is, as I say, in our DNA, and eventually it will come out, and you need to run, at the very least, to walk. You know, and when I'm injured and I can't run, I will still try and walk, because I just have to get my daily hit of exercise, my endorphins.
And I mean, I don't think any comrades was ever easy, but it's the one you can look back on and think it was the easiest. That's an inverted commas.
Yes. I would say, when is it? I'm trying to think now, maybe 39, 40 years ago, 1983, comrades. I don't remember being really profoundly tired at any stage. I was so fit going into that race. I had run some really great times at other distances going into the race. So your listeners who are runners will know that I broke 30 minutes for 10Ks mm-hmm. just before. I was running 5 kilometers in sort of 14 minutes and a little bit of change. So I was very fit. I'd done all the long runs, and race day, I was just so strong. And I don't like to boast or whatever. That's always, I hate sounding arrogant, but I won by 15 minutes, you know, so 15 minutes to lead by 15 minutes in comrades is a huge distance. It's,
what is it, it's sort of 4 kilometers. Bruce.
It was an up run, and literally I can still remember that if somebody had jumped in the road and said, sorry, Bruce, we have to do an extra 5Ks, I would have shrugged my shoulders and said, okay, let's do it. And there's a lovely, lovely, there was a lovely runner, called Mani Kun, very dour Afrikaner, who won the closest comrades in the comrades marathon history. He won by 1 second in 1967. And Marnie always used to tell me that if I cut my hair, because I had long shoulder length blonde hair, he said, if I cut your hair, you'll run faster because you're dragging so much hair around. You just take it from me, Bruce, cut your hair. And at the top of Polly Shorts, which is the monster hill in the up run, I got to the top of Polly Shorts and I was running very quickly, and Marnie was standing there. And as I ran past him, I've got it on television, I've got it on a video, as I ran past him, I ran my fingers through my hair, and I looked at Marnie and I shouted, me and Samson, Marnie, me and Samson. We both needed the long hair.
But a lot of runners, I mean, it is the most difficult. It's an incredible test of strength and endurance. But there's, I mean, it was originally, I know it was originally, established to honor soldiers who'd fallen during World War One. But it's become like the epitome, the mecca of not only endurance, but friendship and literally comradeship, hasn't it? Do runners run for that?
Yes. All comrades runners, that the spirit of comrades is in sort of imbued in you. Even the leading runners, we're trying to beat each other, obviously. But if the runner next to you misses his sponge at a seconding table, you will hand him your sponge. You will, if he misses his drink, you'll grab a drink for him. And then throughout the field, everyone's really trying to beat the common enemy, and the common enemy is the stopwatch. You know, it's the clock ticking away, whatever it might be. You might be trying to break 7.5 hours and get a silver medal. 9 hours and get a Bilroan medal named after the first winner of Comrades, or even if ultimately at the back you're trying to break the 12-hour gun, the final cutoff, and everybody is striving and helping each other. And funny enough, not just that, on the day of the race, the comrade spirit sort of permeates the spectators as well. I mean, you can stop and ask a spectator standing at the road for literally anything, and they will get it for you if they can get, you know, I'm trying to think of an example, but if you needed some food or whatever, they will run into their house and get it for you. You know, the next day, if you try and ask them for that, they'll call the police or whatever, but on Comrades Day, they will do whatever they can to help you get there. And so the whole atmosphere is just so exhilarating and, yeah, wonderful, wonderful
and,
day.
And it's not only the runners and the spectators who are actually there. It's become a kind of South African institution. I think so many of us, perhaps most of us, turn on our televisions on Comrades Day. We may not be runners. We may not know much about running. But maybe we'll dip in and out throughout the day. But people will always watch Comrades. It's something, there's an allure, there's a kind of charisma about Comrades that I don't think any other marathon has.
I think it goes beyond just being a marathon. That's the difference. It's a whole human experience. So yeah, I would never miss Comrades Day in some form or other, either running, helping, seconding, or as I'm doing this year, I'm commentating. And it's so special. And as you say, lots of people who are not really interested in sport will turn on the television to look at Comrades because it's not really about sport. It's about the human spirit and it's about human endurance and comradeship and striving for excellence and getting the result when you do it. So I think people love to watch it.
And it can be heartbreaking. I always watch, even though sometimes it nearly breaks my heart, and I'm not a runner, watching the people who don't make that cutoff, who are sort of limping in or who are running in and don't quite make it. And your hearts go absolutely out to them.
Yes, it is heartbreaking. And I have to say, I have on a couple of occasions fired the final cutoff gun. And that is absolutely horrendous. I can tell you, I try my hardest to give because I can see out the corner of my eyes that there's somebody staggering towards the line. I try and be a little slow on the trigger finger if I can be, you know, to try and give them that extra second. But I mean that is Comrades as well. You see, it's one of the traditions. If there was no cutoff gun, then you could go all day and then we'd be saying, well, okay, if somebody takes 2 weeks to cover the race, can they be allowed to? And I think that the tradition of Comrades is that it starts, you know, it starts with the Shoshalors there and the national anthem and the Chariots of Fire and Max Trimborn's Cockerel Crow and then the gun. And it ends with a gun. And, it has to end at some stage. And 12 hours, I think, is a great time. You've got 12 hours to get from Pietermaritzburg to Durban or vice versa.
Would you do it all again, Bruce?
Oh, I'd do it all again in a heartbeat. I'd still love to do it, but my knee's a bit messed up nowadays. But don't let my family know, but there's a little bit of me thinking 4 years' time is the 100th Comrades. You mentioned this year's the 96th. So who knows, but just don't tell my family.
You'll be there. I know you'll be there.
Now, I'll be there, but I need to run, yeah.
That's something else, Bruce, maybe not a lot of people know this, but you and your wife are responsible, actually, for bringing joy and good health to hundreds of thousands of South Africans. And I'm not absolutely exaggerating. Why? Because it was you and your wife who introduced the park run into South Africa. And I'm sure there are dozens of people listening. Maybe they don't do the park run themselves, but for sure there'll be somebody in the family who somewhere is doing a park run. So tell us about that.
Yes, also to me, park run has just given me both of us, such a new lease of life. Because if you had to say, you know, your comrades wins. One of my friends said to me, Bruce, your comrades wins were for yourself. And if you inspired a few people to run comrades, that's great. But parkrun is almost, and you know, parkrun belongs to a huge family. So it's not me, but it's almost legacy stuff. It's like, what would you like to leave behind you, for people to remember? And parkrun for me is absolutely it. And so we're so committed. I mean, as I speak, my wife Jill is sitting at the desk, frantically working away, helping to launch a couple more parkruns. So for your listeners who don't know what it is, it's a 5K free run, and most importantly, or walk on a Saturday morning, generally at 8 o'clock, with the emphasis on the word free. It is 5 kilometers, and you can go at this stage to one of about 200 different venues scattered around Southern Africa, because we're in Eswatini, we're in Namibia, and we'll be going up into Africa, I think, next year. And as long as you print your little barcode or you have a wristband barcode, you can go along, run or walk, and when you cross the line, your barcode gets scanned and you get your result. And you get a little fitter and healthier. But most important of all, I think, it's about communities. I've noticed that people cannot wait to see each other on a Saturday morning and go for a run or a walk together. But it doesn't end there, because then they all go off for coffee or breakfast afterwards. And the whole of Saturday is, just a special, special day. And I mean, I already know, because I'll be down at Comrades on Saturday, the day before. I will do Westville Park Run, because I haven't done it before. And this Saturday, I'm actually a guest speaker for the Swaziland Eswatini Marathon Runners. But on Saturday morning, I'm doing Mancini Parkrun. I wouldn't dream of missing it.
And in Johannesburg, I know my family, several members of my family, do the Delta Park Parkrun on a Saturday morning. But they're everywhere. They're in Australia, they're in England, they're all over the place now.
Yes, I mean, in the past, I've run a parkrun in Russia.
Goodness.
Yeah, I did Kuzminki Park Run in Moscow. I've run one in Poland. I've run 5 or 6 in Australia, because I've been a speaker there. I've run, I'm trying to think, one in Washington. But then plenty, plenty in the UK, because we've got family in the UK. And it's completely mind-boggling to understand that it's every park run is different. The courses are different, and some are beautiful. Some are in rural areas. Some are in urban areas. But they're exactly the same in what they offer, and that is a 5K free run or walk on a Saturday morning. Don't forget your barcode. And you're running one, you could be anywhere in the world. It doesn't matter. It's a park run.
And also, it has developed, you talked about it, that sense of community and camaraderie that you actually find in Comrades.
Yes, it has. I mean, it just, people can't wait to get together on a Saturday morning. But we've left off a very glaringly left off a very important part of parkrun, and that is the wonderful people called volunteers who come along and volunteer to be timers, scanners, marshals, whatever it might be, run directors. And in some cases, there are the elderly and the frail who simply cannot complete 5Ks. It's just too much for them. But they can still be there, and we've got one in Port Alfred, where I think most of the volunteers come from the old age home there in Port Alfred.
Yeah.
And we had a letter from the matron a while ago, who wrote to our run director, the person in charge of Port Alfred Parkrun, and said, you know, you have given great joy to these older folk here, because Saturday morning is their favorite day of the week. They can't wait to get out there and to be timing using a stopwatch or holding a flag at a corner or whatever. And so, yeah, it extends beyond just participating as a runner or walker.
It's a very proud moment, because my youngest grandson completed 100 park runs, I think mostly at Delta. But his proudest moment was when he became a marshal. Granny, he said, I'm being a marshal. I mean, that was like the highlight of his young life. But also, people take their dogs along.
Yes, so not all park runs are dog friendly, but you're allowed to take a dog, but it's one dog per person on a short lead. And You mentioned Delta, and the reason Delta is so significant was it was our very first parkrun. So when we started, when Jill and I started parkrun in South Africa, we looked for a venue. We were actually looking at Zoo Lake in Johannesburg, but Zoo Lake's just too busy with activities all the time. It's not really a suitable parkrun venue because we'd be canceling all the time because of other events. But we started at Delta Park, and yeah, Delta Park is what we call pilgrimage. So every parkrunner has to at some stage or other go to the first parkrun in your country. And when you go there and you run that one, then you can say you have taken part in pilgrimage. Not quite the same as Geoffrey Chaucer, but it's the same.
You remember your English literature.
I do indeed. Yes.
Bruce will be listening to you next Sunday. We'll be following the race. And you are a very humble person. We are so proud. Bruce, we are so proud of you. And good luck and keep running. And we'll see you at the 100th one.
Thank you, Kate. And thank you for getting me through King Lear in 1974.
Okay. Thanks, okay. Bruce.
From the highest mountains to the bluest seas, the driest deserts to the icy poles, Kate Turkington has traveled there. And now she's inviting you to travel with her through your radio. Travels with Kate, Sundays at 12 midday, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
Thanks for listening. That's all we have for you this week. Next week will be comrades. I'll be talking to you while comrades is actually running. But it was great to talk to one of our greatest sports people of all time, Bruce Fordyce. Don't forget the aerial cableway, and don't forget the book Good Morning. If, as we all have, you have had a loss or you're grieving, but stay safe, travel well, lots of love, lots of life. Look after yourselves and look after others too.